I am the terror that flaps in the night. I am the bug that splatters across the windshield of crime. I am Darkwing Duck, and I'm listening to the Canned Air Podcast. How about you?
Everyone, and welcome to another episode of Canned Air, your tribute to comics and pop culture. I'm Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
I'm Jake Runyon.
And returning to the show this week to, we've already had him on to talk about his comic Final Street, which was successfully funded on Kickstarter. But what we're going to be talking about now is how to pre-order and when you can expect to see this comic, the comic Final Street, in stores. We welcome Scott Schmidt to the show. Scott, thanks so much for being back with us.
Hey, thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
I'm going to have a good time today.
I think so.
Looking back into pop culture history once again for our retro roundtable. And we'll have to explain that a little bit more once you reveal what some of the things we're going to be talking about are, because we're doing it a little bit differently in celebration of Scott being here. Whenever Scott's here, I think we need to incorporate video games.
We tailor the show a little bit to
that. Yeah. I mean, that's Scott's jam.
It is. That is definitely my jam.
Then we're going to swing open the door to the comic vault. What do we have, gentlemen?
I'm actually talking about, I guess you'd call it a sort of nexus point of indie webcomic creators, the way they get exposure, and just an absolute treasure trove of fantastic stuff.
Sounds cool, Jack.
I've got a blast from the past from, I think, 2015. They were on the show promoting a Kickstarter.
Oh, really?
For Star Power.
Oh, I remember Star Power. Yeah. Those guys, they did pretty damn well for themselves.
Yeah, they did.
A few of the things we'll be talking about there, and then we'll turn our full attention over to Scott and talk more about Final Street. But before we do that, Jake.
Twitter, Instagram, both fantastic places to be entertained and informed. Mm-hmm. I take it upon myself to not only make you smile, but deviously subvert your instincts into clicking every link I put in front of your eyes. So head on down to Twitter, follow us at @CannedAirPod, or Instagram at @Canned_Air, and if you like what we do, go to Patreon. Help us out there too. A couple bucks a month goes a long, long way, and if you reach that $5 or more mark, you have access to our Patreon-only Founders Club podcast, what some people describe as their favorite part of the show.
It's true. And what else we got? I'm still looking for those strange, those weird, oddity kind of stories. The unexplained true stories that have either happened to you or someone you know. I want to hear them, put them into this new show that's trying to take form. So if you have a story that is so strange,
it's dumbfounding, hard to believe.
It can be anything. It doesn't have to be a specific genre. Yeah. It doesn't have to be a ghost story. It could be a ghost story, but it doesn't have to be a ghost story.
If nothing weird has happened to you, you're obviously lying to cover up the trauma of whatever weird thing happened to you.
Because it did.
Yeah. So email us. Go to cannedairpodcast.com. Go to our contact page, or just send the email to cannedairpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know those stories, and we'll be in touch with you. Also, your boys here at Canned Air, once again, we're going to be live at the Columbus Podcast Festival. Our appearance is going to be May 12th at 6:45, I believe, our set starts.
Yep.
But this is all happening at the Garden Theater in the short north of Columbus. So if you have some time, come out and show your support and see us crash and burn live.
It's going to be a bloodbath.
Tickets are $20 or the whole weekend for $40, I think it is.
There you go. You can't go wrong. Well, maybe you can, but we'll do the best we can.
If you've got to either buy tickets or insulin for your daughter, I guess you've got a decision to make. But otherwise,
we'll be okay with that one.
Yeah. This is true. But on the plus side, they have booze, from what I understand.
That's true.
Booze is being served, and that's a deal sealer for a lot of people. So
drink the pain of loss out of your mind.
All right. Well, with that behind us, let's just dig right into this week's Retro Roundtable.
Engage. I'll be back.
Shut up!
This week in pop culture history, April 25th, 1992. Growing Pains and Who's the Boss both air their final episodes, the end of an era. Then, April 22nd, 1998, Disney's Animal Kingdom is open to the public. Hooray! April 23rd, 2005, the first ever YouTube video is uploaded. It is called Me at the Zoo. Fun fact, the first ever YouTube comment? LOL. Go figure. Back to you, Jeremy.
Very good, Jay. Very good. So what I was thinking we could talk about today, and again, like I said at the top of the episode, tailoring this retro roundtable around more to Scott and the old video games, because I love to talk about old video games. And what was it, the Disney Park?
Disney Animal Kingdom.
Animal Kingdom opened up. So what if we talked old Disney video games?
Let's do it.
There's a lot
There's some good games in there, right?
Yeah.
I mean, some
surprisingly
of the best.
So.
Scott, let's start with you. What would be your favorite old Disney video game?
Well, I guess that sort of depends on if we're talking like proper Disney full-length feature video game adaptations, or if you're saying like cartoon adaptations. Just kind of depends which
one. Anything that has the Disney stamp on it.
Okay. Well, if I'm not mistaken, Rescue Rangers was Disney, right?
I used to watch the hell out of that when I was
Well, then I would have to go with a definite double tie between DuckTales and Rescue Rangers for
Get out of my mind, you son of
a bitch. Yeah, man. I mean, those two games just, oh, man, I rented them so many times. I played them so many times. I never got anywhere on them because they were so damn hard because I was renting them as an 8-year-old. But, they are definitely amazing games.
Yeah, they definitely are. I still, to this day, will play the old Chip and Dale game. I've got it on the Retron downstairs. But I've DuckTales, there's an app on your phone that is like all remastered graphics. It's the same game, just updated. Like, it looks like you're playing the cartoon.
You know, as soon as you suggested this topic, I remember thinking to myself, whoever talks first, it's going to be a race for DuckTales.
It's the best one, without a doubt. It's such a good game.
I've got an opinion on that, but we'll get there.
The Xbox store has the remastered of all those games.
It's the
Disney
same one.
Afternoon or whatever
it
was called.
All of those
games?
Yeah, like, it's all in a bundle, I think.
All with new graphics?
Yep.
Shut up, dude. Are you serious?
Yeah, it's like it's called the Disney Afternoon or something like that. It was
on Xbox.
Yeah, I think it was DuckTales, Rescue Rangers. I think Tailspin was in there too.
Tailspin was horrible.
I never played the Tailspin game.
I think I did, but I didn't like, because it was mostly flying, right?
It was all blue and a little plane. You're flying in like a guided, it's like in Mario when the screen's moving and you have to run to keep up with it, kind of a thing.
That makes sense.
Yeah, kind of like Space Invaders. Instead of them coming down, they're coming in from the side. You're shooting at enemies.
Like a side-scrolling.
Yeah, my buddy had it, and he showed it to me, and it looked fucking insanely hard. Like, I have no idea how anyone could sit there and have that kind of patience. And it's a funny thing, too, because I think about these games. You know, you were talking about, Scott, saying, like, Chip and Dale and DuckTales back in the day, you know, as an 8-year-old, never being able to get through them. I couldn't get through DuckTales. DuckTales, I said. I couldn't get through DuckTales when I was younger, but Chip and Dale I did, only because there was a level of a persistence that we all possessed in those days that current video games has kind of extinguished in us. You know what I mean? Like,
that's true.
It was that persistence that kept me coming back to that first Turtle game, trying to get through that damn level for years to come. You know,
modern games seem like they don't want to stop you from winning quite the way older games did.
Right.
Older games.
I don't know how you guys generally played your games, but I know as a kid, like, you know, I was basically, I owned like 5 games, but I rented like every game
out. Yeah.
So like your rental is like your deadline. You're like, holy crap, I've only got, you know, like 6 hours left in this game. I have to play it for the next 5 hours and 50 minutes until it has to go back to the store, you know? So
not much sleep happens on those weekends when you're into games. Yeah,
exactly. But that sort of thing doesn't exist anymore. You're just like, I'll play it whenever the hell I can. So,
you know, I remember renting Nintendo 64 games from Blockbuster way back when, and the panic when that deadline was coming up, because I knew everything was saved on the cartridge. Yeah. So if some other asshole picked it up and brought it home for a weekend, there's every possibility all my progress could just be gone.
And oh, yeah. Likely would be.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I definitely deleted people's things. I was like, oh, I got to start over. Sorry, Clint.
To this day, I still think of Rob 64 with a little heart on it. I'm sorry I erased your Bomberman hero save. I know you had like 99% completion. If it makes you feel any better.
Oh, my God.
I went through and re-killed all the bosses you so painstakingly defeated.
That was probably a bunch of late fees on that one,
dude.
You can't tell me there was a small part of you that wasn't just reveling in the fact that you destroyed all that man's progress.
Oh, dude, I was so green with jealousy that he even made that point, and I was having right, such trouble yeah. with, like, the first level. So, no, I was fine.
There yeah, were, like, I remember were,
you took Secret no pleasure of Mana. In deleting that?
There were two other open slots, and I still deleted it.
Damn.
What a dick.
That's cold.
That's the Jake I was looking for in that story. That's the Jake
I used to get pretty lucky with Command & Conquer, the copy they had at my local Blockbuster. My save lasted months there.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Nice. I could just keep going back. The same little skirmish mission.
Probably just means you were the only one running.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a really not easy to play port of that game.
Sure. All right. Well, what else we got, guys?
Aladdin for the Super Nintendo.
That was yes. on my list.
So everyone's game. Picking apart your
Well, I mean, my list contains, I mean, the greats. I mean, right. I expected the list to get picked apart, but that is definitely one of the greats.
The production value.
Out of this world. The music in that game was great, yeah. and I loved mm-hmm. it. It didn't have the saving option, but once you beat a world, it gave you, like, the
little passwords.
Passwords. Yeah. With, like, the picture passwords.
And then Jafar would, like, push the scarab together, right?
Like, yeah. yeah.
Wasn't that kind of like Prince of Persia-ish, where you were jumping around, kinda, yeah. real good animation?
Certainly
from the side.
Some, yes. some thematic. Yeah. yeah.
There was another game, and maybe you know this, Scott, on Super Nintendo, and I don't remember what it was called, if it was just called Pitfall, but it was like the continuation of the old Atari game.
Oh, my Pitfall.
Yeah, Pitfall, the Mine Adventure, yeah.
Thank you. I have that game, and... That game used almost the exact same mechanic as Aladdin.
Yeah.
Mm. The jumping, the swinging around. It was very, very,
very
similar.
It was like
similar.
The same engine or something?
I don't just know about sprites. The same engine, yeah, but it was definitely... What's that?
It looked pretty similar, yeah.
Yeah, but it was bugged because, again, another one of those games you have persistence towards.
Yeah.
Over and over and over, you find things out about it. And I found out, like, a few of the main bosses, like, there's just a little ledge you could sit on where they couldn't hurt you. You could sit there and yeah. tap them till they die, you know. But I ended up beating that game again through that persistence, you know, I don't have anymore.
I remember loving the hell out of that game, but I can also remember the exact point I was never able to get past. And
yeah,
fairly
me too.
Early on. It was
yeah, mine was like level 4 or 5. There was like an underground.
It was
temple.
The mines.
Yes.
Yeah.
The mines were so. Because
the
bitch.
Mine carts would come whizzing by, and there wasn't enough of an interval to like get yeah. past it. I'm like, mm-hmm. what do you want from me? Yeah. It was at the point where it was like stressing me out. I remember
you
I just stopped playing it.
Pitfall.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Dude,
what else was there? Wasn't there like monkeys and shit that threw rocks or something like that?
Oh
that
yeah,
hard yeah. to avoid. Well, or, and there were like monkeys,
red hawks,
the panthers. Like you'd just be walking and a fucking panther would just wow out of nowhere and destroy you.
Then you waste all your big flash stones because you panicked yeah. and you can't aim your little pebbles right.
I'm so glad man. That people have actual experiences with this game. I thought I was dude. The only asshole that possessed this game for years.
I remember waking up one morning on a weekend. And there was just a pile of Super Nintendo games on the coffee table in the front room. And I was like, what is this? They're like, oh, yeah, your cousin Jamie, he left you a whole bunch of games. And I was like, like, it just didn't occur to me that that was a thing that could happen. You know, in my mind, a new game is something that happened every 6 months at best.
Is it like birth miss today?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, Pitfall was one of those ones where, like, I followed it. It was, like, the first game that I followed. I saw it was coming out, and then... Because I'd played the Atari as a kid, and then I played the follow-up Super Pitfall for NES, and it's horrible. It's like, it's one of those games that you can't get anywhere, and it just kills you repeatedly. It's hard as hell, but I loved it. And then so when the Mine Adventure came out, it's like one of the first games that I paid full price, $60, like, as a Super Nintendo added to my collection game, so...
Well, if it was going to be any game, I think that one's probably
deserving. Yeah, I mean, there were so many games back in the day that if you paid $60 for, you were screwed, man. But yeah. That is not one of them. That was a fun game.
Superman 64.
Ooh. That was a bargain bin purchase for me. But at the same time, so was Pitfall.
You lucked out on that one.
I did.
Hidden gem you found there.
But see, again, I'm going back to that thing about the persistence. You know, we've all seen how bad that Superman game is. And if you like, if you haven't, Angry Video Game Nerd has a whole video dedicated to how just the first level is a near impossible race through these hoops you have to fly before you can even start the game.
I remember going through like the second or third hoop and then just glitching into the ground. And yeah. I'm like, why am I drowning?
I did it, though.
Yeah, did you really?
I successfully did it. I never beat the game. But I did do that, and I did get into the game, and it was just so lackluster. So lackluster. It was better than flying through hoops, but it was...
That's good.
Yeah. But the fighting mechanic was horrible. The cameras were horrible. I mean, it can be said for a lot of 64 games.
Yeah.
Except definitely.
Mario 64.
Mario 64 was a treat.
What a solid game. But not a Disney game. Let's get back to some Disney
games. Back on track.
What about Kingdom Hearts? I mean, has anyone here played that stuff?
You know, love that game.
I love that first game. That took me some places, man. Like, I was blown away by that first game. I am equally as blown away in a bad way about the sequels and then the whole, like, fandom that follows. Like, I don't understand any of that and all those characters, like, the Kingdom Hearts like thing with all the keyblades, blah blah blah. But that first game, man, it's amazing.
Agreed.
Dude, the quickest way to destroy your own interest in something is to take a look at the people who love that thing.
Yeah.
We had it when it first came out. Brooke bought it for PlayStation 2, I think. And I think I just more watched her play it than actually play it myself, but it was so cool just jumping between all the Disney realities with the same character and experiencing all these things. It, like Scott was saying, it was just a... I don't know. It's hard to explain. Just that whole universe... All these universes kind of coming together in a central area, kind of like Marvel's always done, I guess. You know what I mean?
You know, I kind of missed the boat on that one, because when it came out, the concept didn't make a lot of sense to me. I had trouble, like, reconciling. I was at that age where I was young, but getting stupid, and I was like, Disney's for kids, you know? So I saw that, and I couldn't reconcile. I was like, is it a kids' game? Is it not? What's happening? And, like, by the time I got it in my head what the whole thing was about, it was too late, and right. I just haven't gone back. I don't know. I feel like I'd be so late to the party. Like, have you guys played Kingdom Hearts? Like, yeah. 15 years ago. You
know? I think it would hold up, though, honestly, that first game, like, if you were to play it now. Like, you know, it's one thing to sit here and talk about games we love with, you know, nostalgic twinkle in our eyes, but a lot of these games, if we were to actually go back, you know, like, I sit here, I can talk up Perfect Dark over and over again, because it was one of those games that, growing up, like, was one of the best. Like, sure. I played it more
than anything. Go play it now, though.
Yeah, try to use that C-pad as a first-person shooter. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I plugged it in within the last year, and my God, it just doesn't happen. You know,
you just throw up as you're trying to move around.
You really do. It's horrible, and I don't know how I ever did it because I used to be a fucking hair trigger shot with that gun. You know.
That's what I don't get. Yeah, is how did we play that game when you go back now and you really just can't? Like, I've tried to play GoldenEye, and I get like. Two minutes in, like, I pick up that AK-47 at that first tower, and I can't fucking shoot that guy who's, like, coming up the stairs to get me. I just can't do it.
Yeah. Well, it's bad enough having your X and Y axis all in one stick.
Dude.
You know? Looking around and walking forward is painful, but...
I can't believe and played default that way. Settings are inverted and all that.
Yeah.
I think we're spoiled by how intuitive modern shooter control schemes are. They're perfect, but we're at a point where the movements in a game like that are more or less a product of your own thought.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a reaction time element, but you're never like, oh, how do I turn to face him? You know how. It's just a matter of, can you do it fast enough? With that, like, playing it these days, you're fighting instinct every time you want to perform an action. You've got to stop and take that critical moment to think, how do I turn my
head?
You
have to relearn how to walk again, pretty much.
I just remember when Halo came along, man, and just, like, blew the competition
out of
the
water. Shaft of golden light came down from the sky.
It's funny because my buddy was home from basic training or like boot camp or something. I hadn't seen him in months. And me and my friends went over to his house to see him, you know, for the first time in a while. And he brought home an Xbox with Halo and had it set up. And we played it the whole time. Oh, we didn't even visit with him. Like, it flipped my world upside down. Like, as soon as I left that dude's house, I was like, I got to get this. I have to own this. I have to own it. Like, as soon as I could possibly
have it. Already jonesing, you know, as soon as you stop.
Yeah. Anyway.
Well, going back to Kingdom Hearts real quick, like, sure. I think what was badass about Kingdom Hearts was that, like, you know, most Disney movies, you just sort of, you think about, like, the romance or the story or just the kiddie stuff, but, like, no doubt each of those movies had their badass heroes, like the Beast and Tarzan and, and all those characters. So, like, Kingdom Hearts, for you to be able to have those guys fight alongside you was so awesome. Like, whenever you got to finally be able to have the Beast on your team, he was a badass. He just, like, was just going around slashing everything, and you're just like, whoa. So, like, I don't know. That was a cool way for them to really, like, take this universe and these universes and really, like, make them into what we like about video games, like, you know, like putting you in the shoes of these people beyond what we know about them, which was cool.
Final Fantasy is what sold it for me, because it was done by Square Enix, and I think they had Final Fantasy characters in there too, along with Disney.
I think Sid was in there at some point. I think
Cloud was in there at one point too, of course, from Final Fantasy VII.
That's definitely the reason why I picked it up, because, like, I was a huge Square hardcore fan, like, you know, from Final Fantasy 3 on, so I was like, well, if they're doing it, then
this game, they just know what people want. It taps into something. I don't know about you guys. When I was younger, I was never content to, like, just like something. If I saw a movie, a Disney movie especially, where I really liked the setting, all that week, that month, I'd be thinking, like, oh, I wish I could be in the setting. I wish I could hang out with this character and that. And I think an awareness of that kind of mindset went into that game. It must have, right? Because it's the unification of all these different settings. Mm-hmm. Someone must have been there, like, you know what? Let's do it. Let's bring these worlds to an accessible place.
Yeah. And it's pretty crazy that they did that. Like, it's crazy that idea went from, like, spitballing in a conference room to a reality. Like, it's pretty crazy that happened.
I would love to have been there the first, like, little brainstorming sessions. All right, Final Fantasy, Mickey Mouse. Boom. What do you think? You're fired. You know? How many levels did it have to go up before it got greenlit?
I mean, I think Nintendo kind of introduced that kind of concept with, like, their you know, they have all their different games, but then all these different characters come together on a medium to
a lot race of cards streams, against
each other and have Mario Smash parties.
That's like even more inclusive.
Smash Brothers, exactly. So I think this was just Disney's answer to that. I mean, in a much better way. I don't know. Those Nintendo games are amazing, and this game, from what I remember, was really good too. So I mean, I shouldn't really be comparing them, but just a cool extension of that.
Yeah.
I wish the sequel stayed on PlayStation or something like that instead of going to I think the PSP was the second one or something like that.
I have no idea past the first.
Yeah, there was a DS one, was a PSP, then there's, like, I don't know, they get into the, like, 1.5 version and 2.3 version of Kingdom Hearts, and I bailed after the first game because, like, this is just getting weird. So
it's an expensive series to follow then if you gotta
keep getting consoles.
I remember a few pretty solid games were the first two Toy Story games. Me and Brooke got each of those games. I think we did the first one. I know for sure we played the second one, but
Toy Story 2 comes to mind as the one that I spent the most time.
That game was awesome.
Because, like, you're Buzz Lightyear.
You're
everybody's favorite character.
And you're playing every level from the movie.
Yeah, the one who can fly, fire lasers, and do everything else. It's like, this is what I wanted out of this
experience. But not only that, like, you remember the scene in, like, Big Al's Toy Barn where he's chasing after Al, and he pulls off that stunt where he zips down the line, jumps off the end of that bat, and somehow maneuvers his way out the door. You know, you have to do all that kind of stuff.
And they made it work.
It was so cool. Yeah. I don't know, the miniaturization and wandering Andy's bedroom, having to climb, like, store, like, peg hooks to get up the top shelf. It was just really cool. It was a lot of fun. I remember we got Toy Story 3 when it came out, or we rented it and like were immediately let down, like not the same experience. So. Oh, what else do we have here?
Lion King from the Genesis.
Oh, that game's fucking hard. That's a good one.
Hell yeah, it was.
Yeah, super hard.
You know what? I think I have that game here somewhere.
Nice.
On, well, it's not on the desk here, but it's in my case down here for the Game Gear. I do have Lion King on my Game Gear, and it's hard as shit.
Mm-hmm.
It looks good. It looks a lot like Pitfall, yeah, actually, sharp. on that.
Yeah, come to think of it.
Surprisingly, yeah, but it's just one of the... I remember the first level of that game was so difficult, and there's so many games that do this, where instead of, like, a path you're being led on... The whole map, the whole level is just one big open map
everywhere
that you can just see a tiny portion of. So you have to keep exploring the whole thing mm-hmm. before you figure out where this key I found goes. And
that is the bane of my existence in all games. Mm-hmm. My awareness extends to like 5 feet in front of me and the 3 feet I just walk past. You know, anything outside of that square, it does not stick.
My my mom bought this game for my sister and I when we were young for Christmas called Bible Adventures.
Oh, man. I remember that game.
Chuck E. Cheese.
It was like a blue cartridge. This thing was...
Yeah.
I'm sure Scott knows what I'm talking about. Absolutely. But there was a Noah's Ark game on there. And it was just the Ark sat in the middle of these big woods. And it was just... You could... To run from one side to the other, it was pretty big. I mean, for Nintendo. And... You had to find all the animals that go in the ark.
Pairs of animals.
And it's just funny because, like I said, there was the ground, the ark, and then a bunch of trees. So if you needed a cow, it wasn't just like, okay, run to the ground and run back and forth. This cow could have been in the fucking tree, you know? Like, you never knew where shit was going to be. And then, like, it'd say... Gather the snakes. Well, there were snakes in the game that would actually hurt you, and then there were snakes you could pick up, and you could never tell the difference.
Hang on, so he chose a species of snake to die in the flood because it was too aggressive?
It must have.
That's a lot of power. I don't know.
It's amazing how they survived, but there's still snakes that are mean.
And that's how we got sharks. Asshole snakes.
They adapted.
They're too powerful now.
Oh, man. Going back to the Disney Afternoon Disney games, what about Darkwing Duck?
Oh, God. And
I never played a Darkwing Duck game.
That's a good one.
On that one.
Go ahead, Scott.
It's very good. It's like Mega Man, kind of like, you know, you get to choose the villain you go after and like, you know, that side-scrolling style level. And don't you have, like, power-ups for your guns, too? Like, you got different ammo types?
Yeah, you do. And that's... The whole Mega Man thing is what makes that game great. The game is hard as fuck.
Yeah.
It's so hard.
Surprise.
But, yeah, I mean, we saw that coming. I don't know. Chip and Dale has a level of ease to it that this game just did not have.
Yeah.
And if you took your time with Chip and Dale and paid attention, you could get through it pretty quick. Not this game. This game just kicks you in the balls over and over. But not impossible to beat. But yeah, you get to choose. Like, oh, if you're having trouble with one level, well, fuck that level. I'm going to go to this one instead. Where you're not stuck having to beat that level to progress. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The angry video game nerd kind of steered me away from that one because he did a Darkwing Duck game and it was asinine, some of the shit you had to do. Like, you couldn't even jump to catch something that was... way up high.
I know exactly what you're talking about, and that was not this game.
Oh, okay.
That was for some CD console. I don't remember what it was. No, this game's a lot better than those games. This is probably the best one there is, but it's still hard. I have it downstairs in the retro game room. We'll have to play it sometime.
Okay.
But,
what else we got, guys? Anything?
I'm drawing a
blank. Shit, what are they called? There's two Mickey Mouse games for Super Nintendo. There's Magical Illusion or Magical Quest or something like that, but it's Mickey as a magician and he like fires fireballs and stuff and he like goes to these forests and stuff like.
Yeah, there was one of those games that was like really well received, wasn't there? Like,
yeah, it's a great. I think it's Mystical Illusion or something like that. I can't remember. I never owned it, but. Yeah, it's a solid game, like killer graphics, and like it's a solid platformer, and like it reimagines like his enemies, like Pete's like a giant spider in one of these levels that he has to fight. I don't know. It's like a kid's version of Castlevania almost.
Nice.
I love how Pete's just the default villain for anything they need. Yeah,
he has no like definably villainous traits except he's a little brash and he's fat. Like that's
I think it's his voice. Like
and the stubble.
Remember the catchphrase that when we had Jim Cummings on the show, he does his voice. He said, "Daddy's favorite little write-off" or something. Yeah. I'll find it and splice it in right here.
Well, you know, I love Pete, and I'll tell you, he's one of my favorite guys. And the fact that he is, and I always joke around. I said, well, you know, Pete and Mickey are tied for first place as the oldest Disney character because he was in Steamboat Willie.
Right,
you know?
Right.
You know, and don't forget, it's the Goofy Movie 20th anniversary in which Pete portrays Father of the Year. Maybe not. He's son, I can't miss you if you don't go away. Bye. You know, my favorite little write-off. You know, me. He's got one of those. He's got one of those scales that goes do re me. And it's pretty easy to fathom.
Yeah, and I know people in life like that too. Yeah. It's funny.
Don't we all? Yeah. Right.
But, Disney games have always been pretty solid for the most part, at least in back in the day. I can't contest
for
anything
recently.
You know what? I
just remembered one. I haven't actually played this one. Maybe one of you guys has played it. It was, I forget the title. It was fairly recent. You were playing as the various, like, iterations of Mickey Mouse throughout the decades, like going all the way back to, like, Steamboat Willie.
Ooh,
and you're, like, jumping through the generations of Disney animation.
I think I know
animation.
What you're talking about, but I can't
think of what it was called. Force you were fighting.
It's like it was on the Wii. It was called Epic Quest or something
that's
like
that? Epic Mickey.
That's Epic Mickey,
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I never played it. I thought it was interesting. I don't think it got great reviews. But
yeah, they did the Wii. The first one came out on regular Wii, and I think the sequel it was either Wii or Wii U, but I think that's why I didn't get involved with it, just because of the I couldn't play a Wii game with a damn controller to save my life.
Didn't you take like a paintbrush and paint stuff into the screen and stuff?
This sounds familiar. Yeah. I think we actually had it in our hands at one point, like thinking about buying it for Wii. It was on Wii at one point, right? I mean,
The first one's Wii exclusive.
Okay, so we could still get. I mean, that's the console we're still going on Nintendo in this household. I don't know. I, with Nintendo consoles, there's only a few games I like. The rest of them are just like too kiddie. So I'll wait for them to go cheap for me.
Yeah.
But the Switch might be the exception. That
Switch is
pretty cool.
I've been pretty impressed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will say, I was a huge skeptic, and I have one, and I really only have, like, two games. But, like, what impresses me is the support just of developers. Like, they have probably more support from developers and probably a bigger library now than they did with the Wii U and Wii combined, which is saying something. So.
Right. It's definitely the most Nintendo hype I've seen in years around a new system release, you know? It's a
new Nintendo Renaissance.
I'm anxious to hear what's been your experience.
I've got two games, and I've looked through the library, and I'm just like, I could get that for the other two consoles. I can play that on Steam, and it'll probably look better.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, there's nothing really good that I want to play.
It's Legend of Zelda that got me.
That game's fun. That's...
Probably plus, there's going to be other games coming out for it. I want to do the Mario Kart. I want to play that.
And I tell you what, Mario Odyssey
is
just delightful as fuck. It's just pleasant.
I've heard it's amazing.
Yeah.
And
I love it.
They're bringing a Pokemon like RPG to that console.
Oh, yeah.
I heard.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
I would like to see on Switch is, do you remember that game that came out that was kind of like a Pokemon fight? It was like Pokken Tournament.
Yes.
Or something? I would play the shit out of that, but
I would love that. Would be probably one of my first, either that or Mario Odyssey would be
like
my first purchase.
Full on Pokemon fighting, like the thing you always imagine happening in your head.
There's tournaments. People online like have like tournaments of that game, and they put it on YouTube. It's crazy. The graphics are sickening. They look amazing.
I believe it.
Oh, I forgot all about that. See, that right there might be a reason to get a Switch.
Yeah. If I don't know if it's on there, whatever. One of these
Pokken tournament?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, shit.
What am I doing?
Second guessing myself. Is it? Why made you think it wasn't?
I don't know. I just didn't know if it was. I thought it was just
I don't
on
think I've seen anything in the library.
No?
Hmm.
Dun, dun, dun. What if I went and bought that fucking console for that game and then realized...
Oh, boy. Time to play some Pokemon Tournament.
Boom, 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 boom. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it.
It's been 35 minutes.
It's been 35 minutes of desperate conversation. I don't know. Maybe that was too difficult of a topic.
No, dude. I thought we hit some good points.
No, we smashed it. No, we got them all. We
smashed that shit.
Split it like a log.
Really quick before we move on, one thing we should mention: we lost Vern Troyer. This week. Mm-hmm. That sucked to hear, man. Mm-hmm. Really sucked. I think he had been at a convention or two, maybe, that we had been at. We never saw him. Really crossed paths with him, but. Yeah, that sucked. From what I've been hearing, all comes from the internet, so it could be wrong.
Yeah.
But I've heard it was possibly suicide, and that sucks.
Oh, damn. I didn't hear that. Bummer.
I could be wrong. I just saw it a few places. So don't quote me on that, because I haven't seen anything official come out yet, as it's only been like a day or two when we're recording this. But at any rate, our thoughts go out to his family and friends. Because he, from what I understand, what I saw of him, I looked into trying to get him on the show at one point, and I don't think he made himself very available for like press outlet in that fashion. But in doing so, I saw that he had like a YouTube series at one point that just was kind of like where it followed him around in his daily life, and just seemed like he was a really great guy, just all around, just happy, great guy, at least on the outside. So. Mm-hmm. It just sucks. You never know what people are dealing with behind closed doors, you know?
Can't really tell.
No, you can't. But, I mean, come on. He's given us Mini-Me. And, I mean, that in itself is one of the most iconic characters of the past 20 years, right? Come on. He was hilarious. But, anyway, rest in peace, Vern Troyer. And, thanks for all the entertainment you leave behind. All right. Well, with that, let's swing open the door to the Comic Vault. Who would like to go first this week?
I'll go first.
Go first, Jay.
So I've got Star Power. It's a webcomic that we talked about. Well, we talked to the creators back in, I think it was 2015.
It's been a minute ago.
They were having their Kickstarter for their second volume. But I started from the beginning because I don't remember much of it. But it's about a girl named Danica that the whole story takes place in the future. We've had first contact with aliens, of course. Everyone's kind of gotten together to put technology, make everyone better. And she's working on a space station as a science...
intern kind of
stuff? Yeah, like science intern, like an astronomer. And she's looking out into the stars and sees a certain star, but her boss is yelling at her, "Don't look at that one. That's not the one we're looking for, the special light that they're looking for." And her boss goes away, and then all of a sudden that light gets brighter, 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 until it blinds her. Next thing she knows, she's in this sweet-ass... powered suit that she has no idea what it's about, and then the space station gets attacked and she fights them off, and she comes to find out that it's basically kind of like a Green Lantern Corps deal. But she is the last one, and it's called the Star Power Sentinels. And she's the last one, and her adventures start there. She has no idea how to use the power. This like orb comes up and is like, "You are the new Star Power Sentinel."
Right.
"That's it. Bye." And she's like, "Well, I don't know how many manuals
left." Yeah.
But it was pretty good. Art is freaking amazing. It might as well be an animated series.
Yeah,
it's so good.
I was actually going through books the other day and found a copy of that I think we'd printed up a few pages when we had them on the first time, and I was looking through it, and my God, it's just such a beautiful comic, and it's so easy to get hooked into that book so quickly. Like, a few pages in, you're like, oh, you're like vested, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So check it out. It's a good one.
And they just recently had a Kickstarter for their fourth issue.
What?
All right, they're working on number 5 now.
Chugging right along.
They are. They're doing it pretty quick, it seems like, having five volumes.
Wow. 2015 they were doing damn well, so I can't imagine how they're doing now. So
it was like 4 days and they hit their goal on their Kickstarter or something like
they
that.
They blew it the fuck out of the water, and like we're already like beating stretch goals and stuff, if I remember correctly.
But it's starpowercomic.com.
Check it out. Easy enough.
Scott, would you like to go next?
Well, so I've got, so my thing right now is that I've got a shop that carries dollar comics. So basically I just go through and I find all number ones, and I'll read anything that's a number one. So the one I've got right now is called US One. Does that ring anybody's bell?
Mm-mm. No. What label is it on?
It's a Marvel comic. It's from 1983. The cover is labeled as High Adventure Trucking Down the Highway. US 1 stands for Ulysses Solomon Archer. And he is a young boy whose family is a trucker family, and his parents are actually killed in a trucking accident, but they're killed by a mysterious evil trucker who drives them off the highway, and him and his brother survive, and so he gets adopted by a truck stop owner named Ed Wheeler, and basically, his brother's not smart, and he is, which is the way that you can basically boil down the story. And he goes to college, and he learns all this sweet stuff while his brother's a trucker. And so then, like, years later after college, his brother ends up driving trucks as well. And so he comes back from college to drive with his brother, and they get run off the road by this same masked trucker. So his brother dies, and he, jeez. Yeah, it's a horrible, tragic story about trucking. And he takes all this knowledge that he has from college, and he builds a badass rig with like all sorts of awesome technology so that he can go out on the road and try to find this masked trucker who killed his entire family. So the first issue basically sets you up with all of that, and then it boils down to the end of the issue where he encounters the masked man once again, and he gets to a bridge, and they have a standoff, and the masked trucker ends up driving off of the bridge, and but they don't find debris anywhere, so it's likely that the masked trucker is still out there. So that is US 1 number 1.
Fantastic. I was waiting for you to say, like, and then he was bitten by a radioactive 18-wheeler.
I wonder how long the series went for that.
Oh, I don't know. What's funny is it's one of these comics that I totally saw randomly in a box, and I was like, oh, man, I need to get that. That looks so bad. And and one of the guys who was at the booth where I was looking at it, he's like, yeah, I know. Have you ever read that? I'm like, no. And he's like, well, you should. It's really good. And I guess Jason Aaron, when he did his Ghost Rider run several years ago, mm-hmm. He brings this character back and like has him play a role in it, which is pretty sweet. So
love the blonde hair with a red bandana.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Shit. I forgot one of the best parts. Oh, damn. So one of his awesome parts is in this wreck that he gets in with his brother. He has to have a surgery in which he gets like this like metal cranium thing with a computer in it, which allows him to have a CB in his head. Yeah,
that must be why that cover has a metal head in the background.
Yeah, exactly.
That is wonderful.
Oh yeah, man, it's killer comic. Like, it's one of those ideas I wish it was mine.
It's funny, this segment used to be called the Comic Dump Bin, and we changed it because we felt like, you know, we talk about the comics in this segment in a positive light, and we didn't want people to think, oh,
there was some confusion
dumping on
their
them,
comic made it the Comic Dump Bin, like, oh, what did I do wrong? Didn't want to do that, but I've been thinking another segment to make would be cool, would be the Comic Dump Bin.
The Dump Bin.
Where we actually go down to the comic book store, grab a handful of things out of the dump bin, and see if they truly belong being there.
It's like that, you know? Star Trek comic I had a little while back.
Oh, yeah.
I was really pissed about because it was horrible.
Yeah. So I think that would be something fun to do. Maybe something we'll explore down the road.
Agreed.
Actually bringing some just light to the Comic Dump Bin.
For sure.
But very good, very good. That was a hell of a cover. Hell of a cover on that comic there.
Oh, boy.
All right. You mind if I go next, Jim?
No, please do.
Are you chomping at the bit to go next?
No, you're old.
Well, what I'm going to be talking about here, I got from a book that I got last year's Free Comic Book Day, the Columbus Creators Anthology, and they just put this out. I don't know if it's every Free Comic Book Day. I hope it is, because I kind of enjoyed it. where it's just an anthology, a few pages of a bunch of different comic creators right here in good old Columbus, Ohio. And one that I flipped to was by Brian Canini, C-A-N-I-N-I, Canini, right?
That sounds about right.
It doesn't really have a title, but what it is, it looks like it's just a single-page commercial for the housewife looking to poison her husband.
But she wants to be inconspicuous about it.
Yes. So it's a box that says, not poison, that you can slide over your box of poison to make sure your victim doesn't know they're being poisoned.
And
that
it's
way,
the perfect crime.
No. If they question what you're doing, hey, are you putting poison in my food? Why, no, look, it's clearly not poison. So what I thought would be fun, instead of just describing this to you, I guess kind of did, but we took the comic here before the show started, added a few little lines to make it more radio-friendly, and recorded our own radio commercial of this very comic right here. So I'm going to cut that in right here.
Tired of this happening to you?
Honey, I'm home. Dinner smells delicious. Hey, this is poison.
Happy anniversary?
Try new, not poison, poison container. Its patent-pending smiley face design will lull your victims into that false sense of security they crave. But don't take our word for it.
Honey, I'm home. Aha! Caught you again, you evil bitch.
Oh, honey, it's
not poison.
Now be sure to eat every bite, dear.
Oh, sweetie, you're the swellest.
Not poison, poison container. Available anywhere fine implements of death are sold.
And we hope you enjoyed that radio commercial. But we had fun making it. You should check out Brian Canini's stuff. Go over to drunkencatcomics.com. Find him on Twitter at drunkencatcomics with an X. But it looks like the Drunken Cat is probably Brian's main character on his website there. It seems to be the mascot for the website, though there are comic archives where you can check out other stuff. But, and I think there are other, like, kind of like Sunday funny-ish strips of the Drunken Cat, you know, a few panel funnies. But it looks like as soon as you go down the website, there's a place where you can even ask the Drunken Cat a question. You submit a question, and he comes back at you, and every Tuesday and Saturday it updates, so I'm not sure how quick the turnaround would be on that. But, for instance, the one that's up right now is someone asking, why are cats such dicks? And the cat just looks at you and says, well, that's simple, Jack, because we're better than you. You're basically our slaves. That's the end of the comic. And how true it is.
Right to the point with that one.
That cat almost kind of looks like the Doonesbury cat.
A little bit.
I'm getting kind of like a Trinky Crow vibe.
Mm. Oh, I can see that too. I love when you can see inspiration in the character. Yeah. So check it out, drunkencatcomics.com. And I hope you enjoyed our little radio, commercial there.
Fantastic.
That leaves Jake.
All right, guys. Well, I don't have any one single comic to share with you this time. I wanted to draw some attention to a rather excellent Twitter page that I stumbled into called Spider Forest Comics. That's just at Spider Forest. This page has a gathering of some truly incredible, active, really diverse indie webcomics from just across the whole spectrum of genres. And I'm going through, and the rabbit hole is pretty endless there. The reason I'm talking about the page as a whole is because I couldn't really narrow it down to any one thing I wanted to single out above the rest. So I guess what I'm saying is check it out and just sample some of the really tremendous variety of stuff you can find on there. And it's cool to see a place where people who produce this kind of content can come together, cooperate, share exposure, because, man, it's got to be a thankless job, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, webcomics already don't get a hell of a lot of attention until they're already mind-blowingly famous. You know, there's like a huge gulf there. And then indie webcomics, these people pour their hearts and soul into something that consumes their life to create, especially on a regular basis. So it's cool that there are places where they can get recognition. So check it out. Find something you like there. I guarantee you will. I don't know if you recall a comic I talked about recently called Moonslayer.
Sounds familiar.
It's actually associated with Spider Forest. So they're just they're everywhere. So yeah, check it out at Spider Forest. Pretty easy.
Sounds cool. All right. Very successful comic vault. Good titles all around. And let's turn our attention over to another good title that Scott has produced for us. Thanks again for being with us, Scott.
Yeah, man.
And we have got to take a peek at Final Street here. Jack brought a copy over, and boy, what a good little stroll through a video game brought to comic that was. Not that Final Street is a video game, but if it were, man, I'd be playing the shit out of it because this was a fun ride.
I can only assume that's the next step.
It had the feel of playing that kind of a old, you know, 16-bit beat-em-up game. I love the health bars occasionally above the characters. I love how the passerby on the street just has a like a lead pipe chilling over his shoulder like it's something to do.
And let's not forget perfectly good turkey legs. Waiting
subway. Yeah.
And I love how the fight progressed to the subway too in the comic. That was amazing. But Scott, we know you know what Final Street is. We know what Final Street is, and a lot of our listeners, since we've had you on before, might know. But there's undoubtedly a group that do not know what Final Street is. So can you quickly set up the comic for them?
Yeah, for sure. So a real quick tagline for it would be that Final Street is a retro beat 'em up comic book. Basically, my co-creator, Brian Atkins, who's the artist, and I, we're both huge fans of the genre of beat-em-ups, which, you know, back in the day was simply you selecting a character and you going from left to right and beating up everything on the screen with a boss at the end of each level. And, you know, a lot of the times the games were urban settings and having to do with gangs and weapons and all that stuff. So, huge fans of that, games like Double Dragon, Streets of Rage, and Final Fight. And we just wanted to see if we could boil this formula down into a comic book and make it work. And
success.
We tried, and I think that we did what we set out to do with this first issue.
It definitely feels like you've been around or have had your hands on a Super Nintendo after you put this book down. I mean, even in the back when you were just flipping through there, seeing like the different moves
and the buttons. That's my favorite part.
Yeah, in order to achieve these moves. So this is coming off the a successful Kickstarter, correct? Mm-hmm. And you wanted to come on and tell the listeners a little bit about pre-orders and how to get their hands on copies.
Yeah, we ran the Kickstarter. I guess it's been about a year or so now, which is funny because the year before that, we actually came on to Canned Air, Brian and I, and we basically just started the idea. So we actually have a lot to thank Canned Air for, because when we came on, we were talking about this comic, but we really didn't have anything like visuals. Like, we didn't have characters. We didn't have any comic stuff. We didn't have a logo. So we came on and we talked about it. And then we're like, you guys asked us for some images to promote it. And we're like, oh, shit. So the next week, we're like scrambling to get everything together. And that really like was our springboard to, you know, get the series rolling. And from there, we started the Instagram page and got that going, and then went to Kickstarter. And then after that was successful, we were able to take it to C2E2 and put it in the hands of some publishers. And Devil's Due Comics actually signed us. And so now that they are in control of the series as far as distribution, you can go to devilsdue.net and you can pre-order the comic from there. And you can also message us through our finalstreetcomic@gmail.com if you'd like to order us directly from us. So the pre-orders were in Diamond, but that just ended last week. So, but even though the pre-orders did end, you can still pre-order it from Devil's Due, and they'll ship it to your house or to your comic shop. And you can also go ahead and add the series to your pull list at your local comic shop, as it will be continue distribution through Diamond through the full 4-issue miniseries. So
it's going to be so awesome to see this chilling on the rack.
Oh, I think I would
at the store. And I'm glad you brought that up, because you know, have you guys being on the show the first time and having just a concept, because we've seen, you know, we've had other people in those same situations come on before, and then they just kind of drop off the radar. You never hear from them. So to actually see this from just a thought
from the ground floor all the way up.
To a comic that's sitting here on the book on the table in front of us and we're talking about is awesome to see. And seeing it on that shelf rack is going to be even cooler to see. I can't wait. And I think it's going to just jump off the shelf at people. Dude. Because the front of it, I mean, if you've ever played like Final Fight in your life, this is going
it's
to...
It's
going to
peak.
There's going to be a part of your brain that lights up.
Yeah, it's going to reach off the shelf and smack you.
Your thumbs are going to start aching as soon as you see it.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So, congrats to you, man. To the both of you, or to all of you, rather. I mean, I guess awesome. There's more than just a few of you involved in this project, but my God, it looks so freaking good. It looks amazing.
Awesome. You're very welcome.
Yeah, man, we appreciate it. We, you know, like, the thing about it is... we're trying to sell the concept, you know, and everything, and it really riding that line between gimmick and like something, you know, that's actually there, because because the first issue, you know, it's about the most pared down to an actual video game level that you can get. Like, you know, we don't have a whole lot of characterization going on. Like, it's there, but we really want to try to put every reader in that first stage, you know, like they just press start, they just selected their character, and now they're just running towards the end of the stage to fight the boss, you know, like that's basically all we had room for. So like, we really hope that's able to capture people's interest and be like, oh, that was awesome. That was a lot of fun. And then the thing is with the second issue and the rest of the series is we still pay a lot of homage to, you know, the other beat 'em up series that we really love and the history behind the games. But we also get to start telling more of our story with our characters and Transit City, where it takes place. You know, it's a world of its own, and we get to start to like, you know, show that there's more to it. Like, the second issue and third and fourth, they won't be like the exact same thing that you just read, you know, like format wise they will be, stage wise because that's how all those games were, but you know, there's going to be more meat on the bones as each issue goes on.
You know, that you just mentioned something I never even thought about. It's, you know, it's one thing to make a comic book that looks like a video game, but it's one thing to look like it, it's another to maintain the feeling of a video game. I think you did rather well. I mean,
without getting lost in gimmick. The vibe is there, but it's not distracting. Everything complements.
You haven't overcomplicated the characters. Yeah. You've given them about as much background as you would get from Double Dragon or from like Final Fight.
You just have an overall story, and you don't get deep into the character at all.
There's
just
room to grow, you know.
And I think that's an important aspect that a lot of people might miss, you know. But knowing that, knowing how into these games Scott actually is, lives and breathes these things. If anyone's going to get it right, it's going to be Scott.
And the last page is the clear screen, the level clear screen with all the points that you accrue.
So how far do you see this going then, Scott? How many levels is this game going to have before it's over?
So the first mini series, it's four issues, and that basically encapsulates what would be the first game. But Brian and I have definitely, you know, stayed up till, you know, wee hours of the night, smashing buttons and thinking about how far we could take the series. And ultimately, we could see it going as much as 12 issues and being...
Oh, sweet.
Being three separate four-issue miniseries. Because sort of the history of beat-em-ups sort of takes you down that similar path where... Three is about the maximum that most of the series went, and they sort of have an escalation of the plot that they all follow. Is your first one's your basic, you know, one area kind of place. They're all in a city, and then the second one sort of ramps things up, and then the third one, for some reason, takes a world tour, and you find your characters going across the world and smashing faces in other countries. So, we've thought about how to adapt our story to that format. So I'd say minimum four issues, and we can be happy with doing, you know, the first game and being happy with that. But maximum we could do 12 issues.
Please tell me that somewhere in the back of your mind, you're thinking that eventually this will be a playable game. Oh, man. Please tell me that's in the works at some level.
I would love to. I mean, that would be the ultimate goal. Like, our thought was that, you know, we're laying the groundwork with this. You know, we've got character designs. You know, we've got story. We've got everything that a developer would really need asset-wise to really get started. And, you know, like, indie games, you hear about those popping up left and right with as little as, like, three developers, you know, or like three programmers, you know, tiny, tiny teams of people, and games even like that, like taking off. So part of me, there's this part of me that really hopes that it could happen, because it doesn't seem so hard to do right now, you know?
Right. There's a convention, a gaming convention I go to here, right here in Columbus, a Cord convention. I went last year for the first time, but it's all like retro video games. And there are so many games that you can buy that, like, aren't real. Like, people have just made at home and then somehow port them into an NES cartridge or a Super NES cartridge. Mm. Like, versions of Pokemon that you can't find, or where they're swearing.
Yeah.
Like one was Super Luigi World or something. Like, one of the hardest Mario games they're supposed to be out there. I played a version of Sonic the Hedgehog that had Mario in it instead of Sonic. People are doing crazy things with games, so I don't
sky's the limit with
it being impossible for you being able to find someone out there who has a Final Fight game engine or Double Dragon that could dress it up to look like Final Street.
Sell a character pack for a pre-existing game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely, like, I know that so there's like a whole community devoted to Streets of Rage, and basically you can get almost any character set as a game skinned with just the Streets of Rage game. So they're like, there's Turtles of Rage that you can play. There's the Simpsons in the Streets of Rage games. Like, anybody you can think of, they make it out there. So, I mean, I would love to. And I've seen that there's actually several beat 'em ups in development from companies out there right now, like small ones. I don't know the name, but I pre-ordered a game from a European developer that's putting an original beat-em-up out on a Genesis cartridge, and it's about 2 years in development behind, but it looks really awesome. So, I mean, like, the fan base is out there, so who knows? We're hoping, but
they gotta bring those
also kind of a tough thing to get into, you know, be like, hey, I've got a video game idea.
Yeah. So those games need to come back. Teach us how to be patient and persistent again, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But Scott, I want to thank you again for being back on the show. Again, to our listeners at home, devilsdo.net, and keep an eye out in your local comic book store coming in June, because you're going to see this gem chilling there on the shelf. We recommend you pick it up. Is there anywhere else I should be telling people, Scott?
Honestly, like, we do most of our promotion and interaction on Instagram. So if you look up Final Street on Instagram, then we do giveaways, chances to be in the comic. We do history of beat 'em ups. You know, naturally, we've got art going on that's from the comic. So follow us on there, and you can get everything that we do.
Is your handle the same for Twitter at Final Street?
We don't have a Final Street going on Twitter right now, but you can follow me, Scott Schmidt, at Pistol Whip Press.
Cool. Got you. Awesome.
Cover all the bases there.
Yeah, I'm just writing all this down so we know where to be promoting for you and right for on. Ourselves. But, Scott, thank you so much for being on the show. And, hey, look forward to having you back again, man. You just let us know.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always a blast, fellas.
Same here. Jack, what do we have on the website?
Go to cannedairpodcast.com, check out our special guest page, listen to the show, follow us on all our social media, visit the Hall of Heroes and see the Wall of Justice, check out some of the videos from our YouTube page, click on that merch button, buy some stickers or something, and if you'd like to be a guest or promote your work, send us an email on our contacts page.
And once more, that is at CannedAirPod on Twitter and at Canned_Air on Instagram. And if you like what we do, Patreon people, do it. There's a whole new show in it for you.
Canned Air, live. Will we succeed? Will we crash and burn?
Be there either way.
Either way, it'll be entertaining.
You'll be entertaining.
It'll be entertaining.
I guarantee you'll be talking about it.
Be there so you can laugh at us.
May 12th at 6:45 at the Garden Theater here in Columbus, Ohio, the Columbus Podcast Festival. It's running for 4 days, I think.
Yep.
10th, 11th, 12th, and 13th. Be there for Canned Air. We're going to put it on t-shirts.
It's
at society6.com /CannedAirPod. We're just going to sit here and keep advertising shit. I'm serious, though. The scary, strange, weird stories that you may have. It can be anything, as long as when you're done with that story, at least people go on, wow, that was weird.
That was weird.
I want to hear those stories to get them on the show. Let me know, CannedAirPodcast@gmail.com, or just head to CannedAirPodcast.com. And go to the contacts page and send us that story. We want to hear it. I think that's going to do it for this week, though. So until next time, I'm Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
I'm Jake Runyon.
I'm Scott Schmidt.
Like a true pro right there. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Buzz Lightyear.
If it hadn't been for Buzz, my goose would have been cooked.
I'm not Buzz Lightyear.
Thanks, Mr. Lightyear.
I am not
Buzz Lightyear.
You know, a lot can happen in 7 minutes, and luckily, that's how long it takes me to tell a story. My name is Aaron Calafato, and I'm the creator of 7-Minute Stories. I'm proud to partner with Evergreen Podcasts, and I'd like to invite you to join me on this journey. I'm going to take you on some crazy roller coaster rides using my unique extemporaneous storytelling style, and together, we're going to try to make sense of the world, all through the art of storytelling, and all in approximately 7 minutes.